Dan Lowe, and welcome to Masters of Our Domain, the podcast that used to be about the hit 90s sitcom Seinfeld and is now about, at the moment, Spartacus Blood and Sand. I am Milo Edwards, and I'm joined, as ever, by my intrepid co-hosts, Phoebe Roy and Patrick Wyman. How are we doing?
I'm waiting for that.
Particularly intrepid today.
Yeah.
Ready to delve, dive, dip.
Delving like and dodge.
Yeah, just like I realized as I got about halfway into that sentence, I realized I was doing dodgeball.
Yeah, although I don't think he says delve, but I think that would be good. Delve feels more metaphorical.
It does. I mean, I would like to have heard Stacey Keach use that term. One of my favorite actors. That wasn't Stacey Keach. That was Rip Torn.
Was it? Rip Torn is an incredible name.
Yeah, it doesn't get any better than that.
Yeah. Because am I right in thinking that was actually his real name?
Yeah, I think it was his Christian name.
Which feels crazy. That
Didn't he once try to kill Dennis Hopper with a hammer?
Oh, no, his name was Elmore. But his surname was really Torn.
No, his name was Elmore.
Elmore. Oh, hey, okay, look, for a certain kind of American man, Elmore still pretty good.
And he is dead, so really putting the rip in RIP.
Yeah.
God damn it. You can't break me 3 minutes into our recording, man.
Oh, and he's Sissy Spacek is his cousin, which is another hell of a name.
We just blew past trying to kill Dennis Hopper with a hammer.
Think he definitely got into a fight with Dennis Hopper on a set.
With a hammer.
I think. I don't know why I have that in my head. It sounds right.
No, it doesn't.
No, Rip Torn was a wild man. This is well known that he was just a crazy person. Mm. He was arrested after breaking into a branch of a bank in 2010.
Okay. In 1994, Torn filed a defamation lawsuit against Dennis Hopper over a story Hopper told on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Hopper claimed that Torn pulled a knife on him during pre-production of the film Easy Rider. According to Hopper, Torn was originally cast in the film but was replaced with Jack Nicholson after the incident. Torn claimed in his lawsuit that Hopper pulled a knife on him. A trial court judge ruled in Torn's favor, and Hopper was ordered to pay $475,000 in damages, but he denied Torn's request for punitive damages, ruling Hopper had not acted with malice.
What? Okay, so I was wrong. Okay, so he did get in a fight with Dennis Hopper. That is correct. No, he hit Norman Mailer with a hammer.
Oh, well, that's fair enough. Who wouldn't?
Yeah, no, that's. I don't think any of the three of us are going to condemn the man for hitting Norman Mailer with a hammer. Like, that's. I think you get flowers from us for hitting Norman Mailer with a hammer.
I bet he started it as well.
Oh, Norman Mailer never didn't start it.
No,
he always started it. Every single time. Like, that's...
Norman Mailer picked up what you're putting down every single time.
Yeah. That's a guy... Speaking of guys who sucked, Norman Mailer.
I don't know a lot about Norman Mailer, to be honest.
So, Mailer was considered to be one of, like, the great American novelists of the mid-20th century. All right, so he wrote a book about World War II, pretty good book, The Naked and the Dead, one of the classics of World War II literature. But best known probably for having a somewhat tempestuous personal life. Like, he did at one point stab and almost kill the woman that he was married to. He was known to have been into domestic abuse and faded because people were like, Norman Mailer just sucked as a person. And however good his books were, they certainly weren't worth
it. The first ever victim of cancel culture, Norman Mailer.
And all it took was him stabbing his then wife.
Yeah.
That was all it took.
That'll do it. What about
one would hope.
What about a carpenter from Utah called Mormon Naylor? How's that for an idea?
Oh my God. Well, his name would be Levi or Ephraim or Ezekiel or something like that. It wouldn't be Mormon. But Naylor, that tracks, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't a lot of Mormons just have those like nonsense names like Bonk or what it like is. Oh, my name's Bonk Tonk. I'm an FBI agent. Yeah, it's like Salt Lake City. Yeah.
My name's Bonk Tonk. I'm a celebrated mid-century novelist.
Or celebrated mid-century carpenter. Some of this furniture, the clean lines, incredible.
Yeah, yeah. No, Bonk Tonk, actually a Korean War veteran. had some pretty serious PTSD that he took out in the furniture industry.
Yeah, well, when he was in North Korean custody, what bonk tonk meant in Korean didn't do him any favors.
Very different context. Yeah,
that
yeah.
is some racist furniture that guy made.
Big swastika bookcase.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great untapped wells of American racism is how many Korean War veterans hated Koreans. Not something we get to talk about very often, but a real thing.
Mm. Yeah.
So,
anyway.
Spartacus. Spartacus Blood and Sand, episode 7. We are past the midpoint of the season.
We sure are. And I tell you what, this episode certainly did not shy away from CGI.
No. If there's one thing you can say about it, it's that it did not shy away from CGI.
There was some 300 level CGI in this. The bit where he kicks the guy off the cliff, I was like, this is just 300 right now.
Yeah, it's rare that you get a callback to a movie that's only 2 years old, but yeah, we did get one here.
Yeah, I was half expecting him to say, like, this is Sparta.
This is Capua.
Mm. Yeah, this is Capua. This is Spartacus. So yeah, I was a little bit confused by the CGI, but I've learned now to take that in my stride.
You poor man, you poor sweet man. I'm so sorry to have done this to all of you guys. A lot of bad CGI in this, some pretty not great acting, at different points. Here was my big takeaway from this episode, but I thought something that we could and should talk about: how enslaved people in this world are made to identify with their owners and their owners' interests. And so we get a couple of examples of that with Crixus and Enemaeus, the doctore. And we get to see Batiatus really manipulating that relationship. Mm-hmm. And with Spartacus too, getting him to fight toward the end there. And I was fascinated by that dynamic because I think it comes closer than anything else that we've watched about this period to understanding how and why enslaved people could behave in those ways or could feel that way or be made to identify in that way.
Mm. Yeah. And I will say also that this episode did contain some great Lawless and Hannah high camp carry-on Spartacus in full force. There's a bit where he says, "And everyone will be wanting to suck my cock." And then she says, "They'll have to get in line." And it's one of the most matron moments in possibly the whole season. She will never not mention that she wants to fuck her husband in a way that's quite sweet almost.
I was going to say, it's quite sweet.
Mm. Yeah, let's not hate on that aspect of it.
Mm.
Lucy, there are many deeply
matrimony.
There are many toxic aspects to their relationship, but how much they like fucking each other isn't one of them.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, they're big fans of it. They're always at it.
They're always at it. You sound like a kind of curtain twitching neighbor in the suburbs. Like, you've seen them too. They're fucking Batiatus and his wife. They're always at it. It's disgusting. They're kids.
You hear them clear up at the top of that rock.
They're kids that live around here.
Yeah. She's at it with the gladiators as well.
You know what?
She goes down there at night.
I went round there for dinner and I don't snoop, but I did have a little look in her bedside drawer when I went up to go to the bathroom. And I tell you what, absolutely disgusting. You know what she had in there? She had a little wooden sparrow. Disgusting.
A little wooden sparrow. The rampant sparrow. Shall I do the episode summary?
Yes.
I'm really happy with that. I'm not gonna lie. Spartacus, I'm really tickled myself.
It's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. Spartacus's world is changed by the death of his wife, and he finds himself at a crossroads. In the absence of Barker, Pietros struggles without a protector and is unable to deal with the brutal attentions of Gnaeus. Meanwhile, Varro is visited by his wife and son and receives unwelcome news that she too, without her protector, has also been raped. Amidst the deceit of the household, Doctore seeks the truth behind Barker's sudden departure from the Ludus. Pietros, now without hope, hangs himself, and Spartacus gets even by throwing Gnaeus off the cliff. that that's such a funny matter of fact presentation of that. Spartacus, again, and of course, the natural course of action, throwing a man off a cliff. Spartacus, again at odds with his Dominus, is forced to repay the loss from his winnings. After returning the stolen dagger, he decides to focus on his new gladiatorial life. In the arena, while dressed as a Roman consul, he fights six criminals dressed as Thracians and is thrusting, and trusting himself to his last god.
The thrusting was earlier in the episode.
It says a lot about this show that, like, my default assumption is that probably says thrusting.
I thought that the funniest thing so far was when Pat said, yeah, didn't he attack Dennis Hopper with a hammer? And literally the first line is, he filed a libel suit against Dennis Hopper. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, and Pat's just like happily repeating it. But now I'm even more tickled by that little error there.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Sparkus thrusting.
He does do.
We do love a thrust.
Do much in the way of thrusting. We have some flashback thrusting.
We have flashback wife shagging.
Yeah, which I want to complain about.
Yeah, well, okay. they've given him like shoulder length. He's got like guy who surfs and lives in a van hair in the Thrace flashbacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you surf in Thrace? Is that possible?
I don't know.
Where is modern day Thrace?
Mostly Bulgaria.
I don't think you can surf in Bulgaria. You could
probably surf on the Black Sea.
I don't know.
You're probably not massive waves on the Black Sea, as it's sort of kind of an inland sea. But you know,
theoretically, if you wanted to, there's got to be some place you can catch a wave in Thrace.
Yeah, I would think so. Oh, and there's bits of it that are like on the Bosphorus. Maybe you could, and there is a little bit also actually on the Aegean. So yeah, I reckon the Snopes rating here is I reckon you can surf in Thrace, but the waves are small. It's more of a beginner's surfing location.
Sure, yeah, this isn't that place on the coast of Portugal with the 100-foot waves.
Mm. Yeah, fuck no, you don't. Oh god, the Atlantic. Yeah, the Atlantic coast is bad. It's really weird actually if you're in that bit of Spain where it's like either side of Gibraltar, you can go like 10 miles up the road and go from like nice calm paddling sea to like fucking a perfect storm immediately. Yeah. So yeah, that's my rating on whether you can surf
in Bulgaria. Yeah.
Okay.
I got really drunk in the town of Dingle in Ireland at one point. Yeah, really, really drunk. And accidentally, as I was walking through the streets, wandered into the westernmost surf shop in Europe, which is in Dingle. Is called Finn McCool's. And I bought a t-shirt, which I had for many years until I finally lost it and have never been able to get over that. But it was pretty jarring to be in Dingle, just hammered in the early afternoon and just see a surf shop. That was strange. That was a strange thing.
Yeah, I mean, Ireland, it's not hospitable weather for surfing, I have to say.
They're surfing in Ireland.
Oh, yeah, people really like it. I mean, I know that surfers will do it anywhere, and surely they'll have the waves. It's rough sea out there.
You don't need to make them sound like they're kind of creatures. Oh, you know, they'll do it anywhere.
But
is that not what surfers are? That's how I always understood it.
Yeah, but I feel like if you're going on a surfing holiday to Ireland, you're mad.
Yes, potentially.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, there's better places
you could go to achieve that. Ireland, great for many things. I think surfing, it would not be my first choice.
Well, that's it. You're not hardcore enough for it. You're not hardcore enough to show up to Finn McCool's surf shop, which I don't even know if it still exists anymore. And say, let's go out past Dingle.
Yeah, looking out the window, just like sideways rain coming in.
It was sideways raining.
You can surf on the rain. It's sideways.
Now that would be impressive.
That was my favorite thing about living in the west of Ireland, was that you could always tell people who had been there for more than a couple of weeks, because you develop a very specific way of walking into the rain. It's this kind of like hunch, because the rain doesn't come down. It comes sideways at an angle. So you've got to adjust your body angle to match the angle of the rain. That's how you know if somebody really knew their business there.
Yeah. God, are you really selling it, Pat?
my dear departed grandfather loved Ireland. Mm-hmm. and always talked about, you know, the gentle Irish rain. I had been there for maybe a week and a half, and I am just cursing this man's memory. I'm like, you fucking liar. Like, you were wrong. There's nothing gentle about this.
You goddamn liar.
Like, Edward Francis O'Meara, I will never forgive you for this. He was wrong about that. My grandpa had a soft spot for Ireland, and it blinded him to the realities of Irish rain.
Well, I think we've found the lunatic who goes to Ireland for a surfing holiday.
My grandfather would never have surfed. It would have been undignified. To surfing, yeah, not to war. He was perfectly fine with that.
That he was fine, but surfing, absolutely not.
Yeah, he would never. Yeah, no,
leave the sea alone.
Yeah.
My grandfather was a navigator on a bomber that was based in Greenland and was doing anti-submarine patrols in the North Atlantic. And I said, Grandpa, did you ever find a submarine? He said, we only dropped our depth charges once. We saw something, but we have no idea whether it was a whale or a submarine. So
whale having the absolute worst day of its life.
What is that? Fuck off.
Yeah, just a B-25, just a B-25 bomber just dropping fucking depth charges on you. Like some poor gray whale in the Atlantic. Like,
ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch.
And that aside from the extreme cold, was my grandfather's experience of World War II.
It's mad, isn't it? Looking back on some of those things where it's like, you spent the whole war doing this one thing and you think you might potentially have managed to do it once, but you don't know it could have been a whale.
Could have been a whale. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. He was pretty, he had a pretty good sense of humor about that, I think. He was a good dude. Yeah. I enjoyed that man. He was great, but I will never forgive him for the whole Irish rain. He and I are, if we end up in the same place after death, which I doubt because he was a devout Catholic and I am not, he and I are going to have words.
I like the idea of that, like, they're sort of being in afterlife, but it's segregated. Like, you're on like the other side of the fence.
I mean, pretty much. It's
heathens.
That's my understanding of how it works.
When I was in Dublin a few weeks ago, I was leaving my hotel and it was raining. And there was this Australian man having his bags loaded into the back of a cab by a local cabbie. And he went, I don't understand, mate. I was out this morning and it was bright sunshine. And then the guy just in the most mournful tone went, it's Ireland.
Yeah. That's a man who knows his country.
Yeah. Beautiful stuff.
All I'm picturing now is like Pat meeting his granddad in the afterlife. And like the first thing being like, so granddad, gentle Irish rain, is it? Gentle Irish rain. And your granddad being like, what the fuck are you doing here? When I was filling in my form, I specifically ticked the no heathens box.
Yeah.
It's right there under dietary requirements.
Yeah.
What
Look,
the
Pat,
fuck?
You think you're giving me grief. Fucking when I got here, there was a whale waiting for me that was absolutely furious.
Yeah, I thought he's like, I did not know the gray whale would end up in Catholic heaven. I did not know that.
One of those like kind of sort of like weird dogma loopholes.
That the gray whale was like, I've been waiting for revenge for 70 years.
Gray whales, they're all in Catholic heaven. Blue whales, samsara.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Sperm whales just ascend to some higher state of consciousness.
It's reminded me of that old joke about the guy who comes home and he's convinced that his wife's having an affair, and he's like he's here, isn't he? I know it. And he like searches the whole flat and she's denying it, and then he gets so furious that he picks up the fridge and throws it out the window, and then he has a heart attack and dies. And then he turns up at the pearly gates. And they're like, right, what happened to you? And he says, oh, well, I got really mad about it. I thought my wife was having an affair and I threw the fridge out of the window and it gave me a heart attack and I died. And there's another guy behind him and he's like, right, what happened to you? And he goes, well, I'm walking along the street, right? And then this fridge lands on me and he's like, uh-huh, right, yeah, I think we figured that one out. And then there's a third guy behind them and he's like, right, what's going on with you? And he goes, right, so I'm sitting in this fridge minding my own business. Yeah, bit of fun.
Bit of fun.
Yeah. Can I make my
complaint about Thrace?
Make a complaint about it's not a complaint about Thrace specifically, it's a complaint about these particular Thracians.
That'll come as a relief to the Thracian listeners.
It is a complaint about these specific Thracians. Now, okay, so as we discussed last week, I know that you two were like, yeah, but then that's just like tragedy if you have formed an emotional connection with the characters and something horrible still happens to them. Right. Okay, fine. I accept that sort of. But like the problem with like historical tragedy is that you know that it's going to befall them. So like it can only really like end badly. Like he's presumably obviously not going to be kind of happily reunited with his wife and then sort of does a slave rebellion for a giggle. Like that's obviously not what's going to happen. Like the death of his wife is obviously what is going to lead him down the path that eventually leads to the rebellion. Like obviously, but since that's now kind of squared away in quite a abrupt manner, if I do say so myself, I think that having the flashbacks is even more unnecessary because I'm like, I can't get interested and invested in this. She's dead. We know where it's mm-hmm. we know where it's going. Like this is skip over this. Go to a barber, Spartacus, and skip over this whole thing. Go on a little ski holiday. Not a ski holiday. Go on a surf holiday. Go on a ski holiday for a bit of variety. Because you can't only surf, you need to do some cross training. Otherwise you're gonna get muscular imbalances, Spartacus.
The last thing Spartacus wants is muscular imbalances. Have you seen him? Have you seen the man?
The last thing a gladiator needs is muscular imbalances. Because, like, imagine, like, you're like, you know, you're in the arena. You're battling some big bastard, and like you turn around, and because you've not been working on your posterior chain, you're quad heavy. What happens if you're quad heavy? He kicks you. You're going over, mate.
Yeah. You got to activate the posterior chain. It's very important for a gladiator.
You have to work on your hammies, man.
It's true. Yeah, glutes. The glutes, the most overlooked muscle group. I mean, not overlooked in the context of this show where there's a lot of ass shots.
Yeah, because they're gluteators.
God, there's a lot of ass shots.
he said exhaustion in his voice. Oh. Just purely worn out by the amount of ass we're forced to view here. Mm. It is a lot of ass. I don't disagree with
it
that.
It is ass though. It's not bums.
Yeah.
I feel like
interesting.
Bums are
define a... what's the taxonomy here?
Okay. bums are bawdy.
Right.
Yeah.
And asses are either like a very, very particular kind of very American kind of dead-eyed pornographic but still oddly unsexual situation. So either that's being in kind of homoerotic fighting or in a sex scene. So that's asses. If it's quite kind of like if it's a bit ooh matron, then it's bums.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And a mistake that I see very often in your costume dramas is an attempt to either insist on asses when what we're really seeing is a bum situation or pretending that a bum situation is an ass situation. Do you know what I'm saying? Do you get me?
I am actually completely on board with that. I think that's exactly right. A bum is jaunty.
Yeah.
An ass is self-serious.
Mm. Exactly.
Imagine Barbara Windsor cast in a Jane Austen biopic.
Nothing insists upon itself like an ass.
Getting into sort of Alex Turner lyrics territory there.
It's absolutely true. An ass insists upon itself. Mm. An ass insists upon itself. A bum is just there to have a good time.
Exactly. A bum is there to bounce in the moonlight.
That's... Yes. Oh my God. Phoebe, I think you are breaking new ground here. I am really liking this distinction. This is a load bearing distinction.
Thank you.
Mm.
Good. I'm glad I've had a chance to say this in public.
Yeah. Wow.
How long have you been stewing on this one? Just out of curiosity.
Doesn't matter. period of time.
It doesn't matter. The point is, it's a fully formed view. Now you just made me think about it. Did you see Trump's kind of impromptu sort of press conference earlier where he was talking about Israel bombing Iran, and he came out with, they dropped one of the biggest loads we've seen.
Yes.
Oh dear.
Yeah. And I was just like, it's so unwise to be coming out with stuff like that. You're going to get clicked.
Yeah. See, that got overlooked in the whole, they don't know what the fuck they're doing line. Mm. That was everybody's takeaway. But no, for me, it was the loads. The loads were where my attention went stay.
Yeah.
Tell us more about the loads we've seen, Mr. President.
I can say I've seen a lot of loads.
Would you say that any loads were denied, Mr. President?
Would you describe it as a no holds barred?
Do you remember when he, one of the best Trump moments is when he was talking to the room full of Boy Scouts about, who was he talking? Is somebody's sex habits? It was a different time than when he was talking about Arnold Palmer's dick.
Yeah, he different was talking time. About a party on a yacht, I think, to the Boy Scouts of America, and something about like what he got up to with all the women on there.
Yeah. And this was a separate incident from all, him just going on at some length about Arnold Palmer's dick.
Yeah.
He's separated by years, these incidents.
He's doing an ad read for Arnold Palmer. Arnold Palmer slipped Donnie a crisp hundy to talk up his dick a bit. That'd be some great guerrilla marketing.
Yeah.
That's literally a plot point in American Pie.
It is. Mm. It worked. I mean, Natasha Lyonne.
Yeah.
Working her magic there.
I love Natasha Lyonne. I will watch anything that Natasha Lyonne's in. I am currently watching the second series of Poker Face. Of course it isn't. It's terrible. It doesn't make any fucking sense. If your whole conceit is that you've got this character who can tell when someone is lying, why is she spending her time trying to solve complicated crimes? Why not just line everyone up and say, did you kill him? Yes or no? She knows. She knows whether or not they're lying. It doesn't make any sense.
Hmm.
I'm not sure that's admissible in a court of law.
Yeah, but like, it's not admissible that like she's worked it out because like this one guy's looking a little twitchy.
Yeah, that's also
true.
At the
state fair.
everybody's looking twitchy
Everyone's
at the state,
twitchy
fair.
At the state fair.
You know how much meth there is at the state fair? Everybody's twitchy. Like that's the dynamics of the state fair. I grew up in a place that hosted the state fair. Trust me, I know. Like this is, it's the meth is right there between the corn dog stalls.
There's meth. It's very hot. There's a lot of unhygienic meat practices. It's, you know.
Yeah. Look, carnies, a lot of carnies. Nothing against their occupation, but I'm just saying.
Returning to the Natasha Lyonne dick sizing plot line. I was remembering this recently. Actually, this happened to two of my mates at uni, where one of them decided that it would be a very funny rumor to start that the other one had a huge dick, and I think he has great comedic instincts in that it is funnier than starting a rumor that he has a small dick, because if you go around telling people he has a big dick, you're much more likely to be believed, because like, why else would you be saying it? And so he managed to get this all around the college, and then suddenly, to his dismay, he bumped into a couple of girls who were going like, no, he really does have a big dick, you were right. and he just discovered that he was accidentally right, and that also he'd like put a number on it, and the number was about right. I don't know what the number was, but he thought this was like an absurd number, and apparently this was then verified.
That is fucking outstanding.
Yeah,
that is so good on every level. That's
it's like some kind of parable, and I don't know what the moral of it is.
Yeah, that one's going in Aesop's next.
Aesop, I'm reading your latest volume of parables. This one at the end, what's the moral of this one? He's just like,
no animals in it.
You know what, man? I was I had had a heavy weekend at the state fair, so you can take that one out. That's fine. We don't need to keep that one in. It doesn't make any sense.
I think it says a lot about society.
Buddy, every weekend at the state fair is a heavy one. The last time we went to the state fair here, I had 2-foot-long corn dogs, an order of fried pickles, and my daughter fell off an barely supervised piece of gymnastics equipment.
Hell yeah, brother.
If that ain't America, I don't know what is.
I really want to go to the state fair now. I want to eat atrocious food.
Have I ever told you guys about the time I got stuck on a piece of fairground equipment?
No, that's terrifying.
So some years ago, this was
Phoebe Law here.
Deep Phoebe Law. This is during the 2010 World Cup. Yeah, World Cup. It was during the 2010 World Cup, and I wasn't watching it that year, out of spite, because my boyfriend at the time was really, really keen on watching it, and we had a row the week at start. So I was just like, well, I'm just not going to watch any of the World Cup with you. And
of course, you hated Shakira's It's Time for Africa, Waka Waka.
Well, to be honest with you, that was unfortunate. It was regrettable, the Shakira This Time for Africa, Waka Waka.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that would have made it through an ethics board these days.
No,
you can't do that because of woke.
I'd have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but we're in woke too now. I'm pitching something to the MYT about how I eat in the afternoon. And everyone's going to react to it angrily, but for different reasons.
If that's not blue sky, I don't know what is.
So I wasn't watching any of it. And at our local park was this kind of fairground going on. And one of my toxic trait is I fucking love fairground rides that are a little bit too dangerous to be set up by some guy in a park over a weekend. I like the kind of fairground ride that it's like that, like, really that needs to be like a like at least a semi-permanent structure. Like it cannot be safely put up in those couple of days. And like you know every so often you find a fairground ride and it's sort of like a mini roller coaster and you're like, how is this possibly allowed? That's it. That's my shit.
Yeah.
And this particular fairground ride, it had kind of little seats kind of emanating from a sort of central pillar. And the seats kind of like turned you a bit like upside down and were sort of, they were kind of undulating. But
Mussolini's Revenge, the fairground
exactly.
ride.
Exactly. Yeah. But the central, it's called the St. Peter, but the central... the central kind of post thing sort of goes up and down while you're seated. So it like it doesn't look like that impressive, but when you're on it, you're like, oh my god, I really could die. That's what I want out of fairground
ride.
I want there to be a possibility that you're gonna die. So I'm on this fairground ride with my friend Liz, and we're having a great time, like, you know, kind of hollering and kind of, you know, sort of smashing into each other and being like, oh god, this is so scary. And then I look down and the guys who are allegedly supervising this ride are all crowded around a laptop watching the World Cup, and neither of them are looking at the ride. They're just smashing the go again button. And I'm like, okay, well, they're only going to do that once, surely. Yeah. No, they carried on doing that for the entire second half. We were on this thing for like 45 minutes.
Oh my god.
And they just
that sounds horrifying.
Just pressing the go again button. Smash. Oh, look, it's slowing down. Smash. Because they didn't want to like admit a bunch of new people onto the ride.
That is the strongest carny behavior I've
and,
ever
like,
heard in my life.
Everyone's like kind of like hollering down, like, you gotta stop the ride. And they're just like, oh, it's weird how I can't hear anything apart from this laptop.
Oh my god.
Yeah. There you go.
I love those rides. I want to hear the steel creak.
Oh,
in
yeah.
ways it's not
yeah,
supposed
yeah.
to.
Mm.
Like
I once got my shoe caught in a tree.
Shoe caught in a tree?
Because they'd set up one of these rides too close to a tree. And it just like my shoe came off. And it just sort of attached itself to the brush.
And that's not a place where you want to be barefoot.
No.
You don't want to be barefoot in one
no,
of those spots.
You really, really, really don't. They had one of these at our university grad ball as well. And before we went on, a friend of mine and I had taken some substances, and we were like, let's go on the rides. And then when we like came off, we were just like, I don't know what happened. I don't know what went on there.
Iconic
indeed. So what else happens in this episode? Like, the whole point of the of what happens in the last episode of like Barker and his twink, whose name I've forgotten,
Petrus,
I think, yeah, is again a little bit undermined by this like horrible, unnecessary plot line in this episode with this like poor guy being like sexually assaulted and then kills himself. Like, what's the point of setting up this relationship in the prior episode? I don't know.
I think this goes back to the argument that you two were having last time.
Which is...
It does.
Which is, I don't like it when things are upsetting.
Yeah, I mean, it matters because... this is my take. It matters because this is, to some extent, the reality of life for enslaved people in the ancient world.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to step in and help Petrus. And the way that they talk about him in this episode, I think it's really good, right? Because when Petrus is dead and Spartacus is explaining why he killed Gnaeus, why he threw him off the cliff, and Batiatus is like, Gnaeus was a gladiator. He cost me so much money. Mm. Petrus was worth a couple of coins. That's why.
Okay, fine.
Because that's the way that they're discussing the value of a human being. That's why that's in there.
Okay.
The differing standards of value of a human life.
But they could have had that without the backdrop of him being abandoned by his, or thinking he's been abandoned by his boyfriend, but he hasn't.
Could you? Would it hit the same way?
No, maybe not. But it's like, what I felt about it is what I feel about all of the kind of the emotional hinge points in this show, which is just a bit fidgety and a bit squeamish. Like, it doesn't actively upset me. It's just like, well, God, that's not necessary, is it? Come on, man.
But that's kind of, to me, that's the appeal of the show as a whole. Is this necessary? Absolutely not. None of this is necessary.
That's true.
Like, the whole, this is
none
not.
None of this is necessary. Come on.
Yeah.
This is not a subtle show. Mm. And it makes no pretensions to being a subtle show. And when it wants to make a point, for example, about how these people are viewing the value of a human life and what kind of agency enslaved people actually have, it tends to do so with all of the subtlety of a hammer. And I think they wanted to make really clear, like, Petrus is in this position. Like, let's talk about him as a character, right? Mm-hmm. He's in this position. He didn't want to be a slave in the first place. He certainly didn't want to be the errand boy down among the gladiators to whom he is a sex object. Again, accurate reflection of this society. Mm-hmm. He didn't want to be left behind by Barca. Why is he left behind? Because Batiatus's selfishness and fear of being found out, and Osher's selfishness and fear of being found out, combined to get Barca killed, right? So yes, Petrus is, he really doesn't have agency. He doesn't have a lot of scope to make decisions for himself. And we're seeing the really tragic ramifications of that here, is that nobody is going to step in to protect him. Mm. Nobody cares about the value of his life because they're much more inclined to see its value the way that Batiatus does,
yeah,
and not the way that Spartacus does. And in the end, what choice does he have? He has the choice to take his own life, and he does it. And that's, again, a really common thing among enslaved people in the ancient world, high rates of suicide. Mm. Because what agency do you have? What control do you have? You have control over when your life ends. And so we read accounts of Roman slave masters being really angry that, oh, my fucking slave killed himself. Like, yeah, of course.
So what you're saying is, like, that's your sovereignty. You are able to rob your master of a tool that they paid for.
Exactly.
No, don't kill yourself. You've got such economic value. Aha. Uh-huh.
Yeah, but
who else is going to teach my son Greek?
Mm.
But from that perspective, that's really, really, really sad. right?
Oh, yeah.
That's really bleak and really tragic.
Yeah, it is. I don't know. Like I said, I just thought a bit kind of, oh, God. I actually had a question for Pat off the back, because I think what you're saying about the relationship between master and his slaves and the kind of the position of enslaved people in this society, I think is like super, super interesting. And it's not something that I know a ton about. And it's definitely not something that I think is really addressed in any of the media that we've been consuming for Mood 2. And I think like part of that is that things tend to be about a very particular set of people. And it's really, really easy when making media about these people to unwittingly kind of reproduce the dynamics, even if you think that you're not reproducing the dynamics. So like the succession problem, basically. So that is like, that is super interesting, but it did make me think of something while we're watching it. And I'm just really interested in whether or not we know the answer to this, which is, what would the slaves of a household have called their master or master and mistress, or you know, the people who own them? What would they call them behind their back?
We don't really know. I would guess. Okay, there's a couple of different ways to answer this. Mm-hmm. So we know that they're supposed to be addressed as Dominus or Domina, so master. And one of the interesting things about Roman society is that as time goes on, this form of address becomes used much more widely, and not just among masters and slaves. It becomes the way to refer to the emperor in the late empire. This way of thinking about hierarchy and power eventually ends up infecting even political society. Mm-hmm. So this is
the move from the principate to the dominate, right?
That's why they do it, is because the later emperors want to be addressed as dominus. Mm-hmm. That's why we call it the dominate. Yeah. As far as what they would have called them, we don't really know. Mm-hmm. Because the kinds of sources that we have at our disposal very rarely give us unfiltered insights into how slaves thought about their masters. Mm. Almost every source that we have is masters talking about slaves talking about masters. Mm. There are a couple of exceptions. So we know that enslaved people were perfectly capable of making fun of their owners. Mm. We know this because it shows up in the plays of Plautus and Terence. Mm. And Plautus and Terence, these are old, right? Like this is around 200 BC, 160 BC, in that range. So this is Middle Republic.
You know Plautus and Terence, they are plumbers.
Yeah, they were sort of like the two Ronnies of ancient Rome.
Plautus and Terence are great because they get
nice blokes. They'd give you the shirt off their back.
They would. They give us insight into these kinds of social dynamics in ways that are often very difficult for us to see. And enslaved people are major characters in their plays, as are freedmen. And it doesn't give us direct access, but it tells us enough to know that masters were really afraid of their slaves making fun of them behind their back, or manipulating them or leading them on, that this was a kind of a constant concern, that they were really... you're really self-conscious about it. It really worried them.
So that's why we have the sly freedman as the stock character in Roman comedy, right? Because they're the people who don't know their place, and they're like making fun of.
Yeah, the nouveau riche freedman, the clever slave, is a trope, right? So we're still not getting direct access, but what we have is enough to say that there is a whole world of enslaved people talking behind their masters and mistresses' backs about them. There are whole whisper networks. There are collective decisions being made in the household about how to treat the master and the mistress of the house. There's enough that we know that these dynamics are real. So the kinds of interactions that we see between enslaved people in this show, where they're kind of trying to manage the masters, right? They're deciding what information to give them, what not to, how to present it to them, when to keep their mouths shut and when not to, when to be paying attention to a scene that the masters are speaking in, right? Like, because one of the things I love about this show is it's constantly showing us enslaved people in the background, right? As if they were bits of furniture.
Yeah.
We know they're not furniture. We know they're people, right? Mm. And so this is a real thing. We know that they did have, they poked fun at them. They, they might, there's one case that I remember reading about where a master killed his slave because he tripped him, probably intentionally. Mm-hmm. The slave was mad at the master, stuck his foot out, trips the master, and the master kills the slave. And the master's justification was, well, he made me angry. Mm-hmm. And that was not, but in fairness, that was not considered to be enough of a justification for having killed the slave. Mm-hmm. So we know that this stuff happens. We know that there's all kinds of resistance undermining happening all the time. But we don't get to see it in nearly as much detail as we'd like. And that's a big part of the reason why, to understand Roman slavery, we have to turn to kind of ethnographic parallels in a more modern record. We need to turn to studies of Islamic slavery. We need to turn to studies of racialized chattel slavery in the Americas. And they're not perfect parallels, but they can help us get more access to those dynamics because those periods are better documented. Sure.
Okay, that's really interesting. No, because there's this scene where Crixus and his tart, what's she called?
Oh, Naya.
Navia.
Yeah, this is the plot that Pat likes and that I don't. And they're talking about Lucretia and they're calling her Domina, but they're talking about her. And I was like, huh, would they have called her the Domina when they were just talking to each other?
So I think in this case they would have. Because if we think about who those two enslaved people are specifically, so Navia's backstory is that she is a houseborn slave. Mm-hmm. So to the extent that we've gotten her backstory, she is a houseborn slave. She has been born and raised in that household. And so that is the only life she knows. Those are the only authority figures that she knows. Her entire life has been shaped by her servitude to those people. So I think that's perfectly realistic. Yeah. And Crixus, one of the things that makes him an interesting character for us here is that he is fully bought in to this way of viewing it. I was also very distracted by how fucking thick his neck is. Like, man, that's a neck.
Yeah.
That man has a goddamn neck on him.
He does not skip neck day.
Mm. Nope.
Yeah, he looks like he's just built upside down. It's like a thigh.
I love it. Look, I'm all about body positivity for refrigerator shaped men. But that's what makes this interesting is like in that specific conversation, we have the houseborn slave and the man who has fully bought in to the worldview of the masters.
Okay.
And so I think in that context, it makes sense. If we were talking about like Osher or, somebody cheeky, right? Like then, yeah, they've got something to say. Because Osher calls him Batiatis at different points, right? Like, so we actually do get to hear a little bit of that contrast.
Mm. Okay. That is a really, really thorough answer. Thank you.
That was not supposed
to be like Arch. Like genuinely, that is a genuinely really interesting answer.
We will never refuse a thorough answer on this.
We will never refuse a thorough answer. I love a thorough answer. I have another complaint.
Sure.
Now, again, I understand that this particular plotline is there to like illustrate how it's horrible to be a Roman twink without your protector. It's also horrible to be a woman without your protector. However, the response of Varro to his wife telling him that she has been raped, right? His first response is, "Well, why didn't you stop him?" Which seems like quite an unreasonable response, really, seeing as the whole conversation is about how this happened because she is without her protector. So precisely what she was meant to have done to stop this happening is a little bit mysterious. But given that Varro is meant to be one of the few nice characters, is this behavior, I'm not going to frame this as a question because I think this is what is going on. I think this is like an attempt to introduce a little bit of complexity and layering to the character, to sort of say like even the ones who sort of seem kind of relatively decent, like not bad blokes, are still like, you know, they're still very much functioning like according to the, you know, mores of the time, to the mores and the tempores.
I think that's accurate.
Which like, okay, fine, but it does make me hate him quite a lot, and it makes me even though, like, we know something terrible is going to befall Varro. Of course we do. Like they've now shown us the angelic child. Like, come on, guys. Yeah,
there's no way that ends there's well no for, way the, guy, that ends for that, the father of the angelic child.
For the father
child.
Of
no
the
way.
Angelic child.
Ooh, angelic child, mate. Big job.
Oh, it's a big job. Mm,
yeah. I'll tell you what, you better hope that's insured.
Look, you know
what?
Because
that's going to need to all be underpinned.
You know what? I could let you walk away. I could let you walk away right now with that angelic child. But you'll be back here within a week.
So I
would
think
not be doing my job if I let you walk away with a child that large-eyed.
You are 100% right. And it comes back to this show not doing subtlety.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there, because what we get in this episode, the theme of this episode is different ways of understanding the value of a person.
Yeah.
Right? And that is the thing that runs through all of the different plot lines that we have in this episode, is what is a person worth? What defines their value? And so on the one hand, we have Spartacus's idea that just being a person means that you have value,
mm-hmm.
which is not a viewpoint that anybody else in this world shares.
It's a kooky one, but they also have some stuff. They also have some stuff about Spartacus not really believing in the gods and his wife being like, yeah, but like, gotta believe in the gods, right?
That's why he's the least compelling character in this show, is because he is solely there to be a mirror.
Mm.
That's his whole purpose. He is not the thing that makes this show interesting.
That's why
the character
he's so
of Spartacus.
Shiny.
Yeah, he's just not there for that. He's eye candy. We wish he was a bum. Instead, he is an ass. that's how we're viewing
he's
him.
He's a big jacked fella. What can you say?
See, Batiatus and Lucretia, they're both bums. They're like, they're the villains of the show, but they are bums.
Yeah. Ilithia, bum.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
Absolutely.
Glabba, ass.
Interesting. Yes, I agree.
Mm.
Mm. Yeah. So this is the contrast that we have. This is the contrast that they're setting up for us. And we're meant to understand, I think, because we know where Spartacus is going with this. We know that there is going to be a slave rebellion and Spartacus is going to lead it.
Yeah.
And what we need to understand as the viewers is what an uphill battle it is to get for him to get into a position where he can make that rebellion a thing, that he has to convince these people that their lives do have value, that the master's way of understanding who they are is wrong, right? The master's way of understanding what value they have is wrong. And I think what we're supposed to understand from this, including the Varro thing, is how wide that gap actually is, even between Spartacus and his best guy.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we're supposed to get from it. It's not subtle. I would think that there are implications to that choice that they maybe should have thought harder about. But it comes back to two. Crixus says, do you remember when Crixus and Navia are talking? And Crixus is like, well, if you were strong, blah, 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 blah. And Navia says, well, we can't all be strong. So the whole point is that you want to make a world where you don't have to be the most dangerous motherfucker in the world to be able to not be brutalized. That's the, and so that's what they're trying to get us to. I don't think you needed the Varro thing to do that.
Mm.
I think that's kind of misunderstanding his purpose as a character. And like, he has a function here. We know what his function is. We know something bad is going
to
happen to him.
Yeah.
We know that he has a wife.
Like, he's in the Bowdoin catalog until he eventually gets killed.
Exactly. That's what he's there for. So lean into that. We don't need, I don't think we need this level of like complexity from him.
No,
we
don't. And yeah, like I said, like it's one thing to have in order for like a bit of honesty. Like it would be quite annoying if he had like a completely kind of contemporary kind of like, oh my God, how can I support you? Like woke Varro would be very irritating and it would kick you right out of the narrative. But the fact that he's such a piece of shit about it, like Varro, this is not a real guy. Like they could have chosen not to have this happen to his wife and not to have him react like this. This is not like the difficulty of portraying real life historical figures in all of their, you know, shades of light and dark, because these are invented people. Anything they do is because you have made them do it. So why do it, considering that you're going to expect us to care in a couple of episodes' time when whatever happens to Varro is going to happen.
Yeah, we did not need this.
No, it's not necessary. This,
there is a fine line between making sure that all of your various plot lines are thematically consistent within an episode,
yeah,
which they are here, and all of them being necessary to make the theme work.
Mm-hmm.
That one wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
And it plays into exactly what makes you feel icky about this, Phoebe. The like using women as a symbol of oppression and exploitation for men to react to.
Yeah.
Right. Like that is icky.
Yeah.
And they don't need to do it as much as they do. And I think it's fine incumbent upon us to be like, that's fucked up. Probably didn't need to do that one.
Yeah. And it's what I think it's one of the things that makes it feel very 2010 in a way that
I'm in with that.
In a way, you know, it doesn't always.
What a time it was. Nick Clegg's on the rise. Tinchy Strider is in the charts.
We're all still kind of optimistic about Barack Obama.
Yeah.
It's woof. 2010.
Well, I mean,
Osama bin Laden is still looking at ass.gif.
It's still at large.
We didn't know cigarettes were bad for you.
Yeah.
with his Wario Obama.
Yeah.
Have we said everything we need to say about this episode?
Yeah.
The real highlight here, like everything is extraneous except for the ass bum distinction. Everything else is we can cut. We can leave on the cutting room floor.
There was one bit in this episode that struck me as odd.
Actually, wait, hang on. Is Osama Obama's Wario?
Good question.
Which way around is it going?
He's Bush's Wario.
Mm.
Yeah, but like just for linguistic symmetry.
Yeah, George Wario Bush. anyway, yeah, there's the bit at the end, right, where Spartacus fights the prisoners who are dressed as Thracians and he's dressed as a Roman, sort of, you know, a lot of ironies occurring.
George Bush, he was a Mormon carpenter.
Yeah, that's right. there's a bit where one of them is like, he's like quite seriously wounded, but he's not dead.
Yeah.
And then Spartacus is like, he's about to kill him, and the crowd are all chanting for him to kill him, and then the guy's like, don't do it. And then Spartacus has this like insane, like interstellar style flashback of his entire life in captivity, and then he kills him. And I'm like, what are you supposed to read into that? That like, he's like, like after remembering all of the suffering that he's gone through, and then he's like, and then he's looking at this guy who's probably suffered in a similar way, he's like, yeah, fuck this cunt. Like, it's I don't understand what they're seeking to imply.
Okay so I think there's something there. I think this is what they're trying to get us to, is that even Spartacus, the guy who seems most committed to the idea that all of them have value, can be warped by the structures that they're put into.
Mm. Yeah, I think what you're meant to take from it is that this is the point at which Spartacus shows that he's being like coarsened by his experience in the ludus. And he also, like, after like the loss of his wife, which was the thing keeping him wholesome and keeping him decent.
The old ball and chain.
Exactly. The idea that he might see his
wife wouldn't even let me kill a bloke in the arena.
I mean, she would.
No, I'm doing better now. I am. Yeah.
She would.
Having a great time out on my own.
She would let him, but you'd hear about it after. She'd say, fine, go on.
Yeah, go on then. Kill a bloke in the arena.
Go on.
See if I care.
Go on. Kill a bloke in the arena. Do it. You know what? I actually find it really funny. I actually think it's really funny that you think that I would care if you kill a bloke in the arena. That is what I find funny. I don't know why,
but I'm getting really strong like Liverpool vibes from the person that you're portraying here. Yeah. She sounds like a Liverpool girlfriend.
Yeah. Liverpool girlfriend. That's
Spartacus holding up a severed head to the cop end.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's woof. Yeah, I mean, I think
I don't think I can even say what I'm going to say on the recording. I think we might have to cut this out, but I was going to say,
yeah, you are definitely cutting that out. That's lifting straight on out there, brother.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole deal here in this episode is we're meant to understand the power that these ideologies, for lack of a better term, have to warp the worldviews and behavior of the people who are exposed to them. And we get to see it at every level. Like, we get to see how Pietros is left without hope, completely without hope for, that anything could ever get better. And that his assessment of that is not necessarily wrong, you know, that like he's been put in that position by other people. It's not his actions that made that the case. And that they're all Pietros, whether they want to believe it or not, they're all in that position, whether they think they're strong or not.
Yeah. No. I think, I think that's right. And I think it's supposed to like indicate that, like, now that his wife is gone, he's got nothing left to be decent for. It is not a subtle show, so that's how they chose to.
No, I think she was good for him. You know, he has been a bit of a mess.
You know, yeah. You know
all
what?
The subtlety.
I wasn't sure about her. You know, but I actually think that she was the best part of him.
Yeah, he has gone to pot a bit. Right. Well, that has been Master of Our Domain. I believe that was a free one. I think last week's was a bonus. I think this is a free.
I think that sounds right.
It's an odd number, so it should be a free one, I think. So, hello. Thank you for listening. We have a Patreon. It is $5 a month. You get twice as much of this podcast. It really is that simple. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.